And so the idea that we would use another document other than the Bible as the source document is something that I do with great trepidation. And if that interest level isn't shared, then I have no interest in teaching. So, and again, I asked you all to consider carefully whether or not this is something that you would want to study, you want to be interested in. It's going to take a commitment, because you have to commit to, it's extremely complex. And it's something that can enrich your life beyond measure, because every night when you look out on the stars, no matter where you are in the world, you can look up and you can have the witness of the stars and the witness of the mystery wherever you are. But it's not, again, remember, this was the stuff that was only the Magi, only the highest order of priests studied. It wasn't for the general public. And again, it's not necessary for salvation. In my opinion, it's fascinating. But whether or not you want to do it, you have to decide. And if you decide that we want to do it, then I expect from you a commitment from, relatively speaking, in terms of attendance and in terms of focus. If you're not interested, that's fine. We'll do something. There's a whole lot of things that we have to study. So let me hear from you.
I've had weird feelings about this kind of thing going on, and it's I feel like when someone says focus, I mean, how can I say in the future I'm going to even be able to focus at a certain time or a certain place?
Well,
it's
the same as the Shema. When you read, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one," and the word "hear" is the word Shema in the Hebrew, and it means that you are in agreement whenever you say the Shema, that you leave everything else outside the door when you come in here. That's the agreement. That's how it's done, and that's what's expected. That's what's expected of a disciple. I mean, it's not a matter of you're not making a vow other than to simply say that at this moment in time you believe this is important and that you will you for some reason have. Again, I don't want you to act like you're interested if you're not. That I just want to know if you're interested. Again, do you understand my position? It's the only time with this group of people that we've ever studied anything where the Bible wasn't the source book. And so therefore it's not it's from my perspective, it's a different view. Well, again, the purpose of this is another witness. The Bible is one source. To me, the stars are another, and they both say the same thing. You can hear it as a performance requirement. All I'm asking, and that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking as to whether or not you're interested. If you're interested in it, then everything will be taken. It'll take care of itself. If you're not interested, that's what I want to hear. But there's no
rules or anything.
There's no rules. The only thing that I would ask of you, and this is what got me so on a trip, I guess, Tuesday night, was that I can't begin to tell you of the amount of study and digging that it took to find all this stuff. And so I think what I was asking for, and this may sound crazy, but I think I was asking for, that's not
hunger?
The word. Huh?
Is there hunger?
Yes. Yeah, if there's anywhere near equally the hunger in you to find it as it was in me, I guess that's really what I'm asking. We talked a great deal about the Magi, that they were under Cyrus, they were given the priestly functions, that we believe that Daniel was the teacher of the founder of the Magi, who was the Zoroaster.
Is this Cyrus the one that said to go back to build the temple?
Mm-hmm. And we talked about that they were primarily responsible for the concept of dualism, that there was good versus evil, fighting it out. They believed in a bodily Messiah. They believed in angels and demons. They believed in a bodily resurrection. Their function was, in their mind or their view, they guarded the sacred fire. They offered sacrifices of fruit and flowers. They were granted huge estates in Persia and Media. They gained reputation for the magic arts. We found out that some of them were charlatans. They studied astrology and astronomy, the first that we know of.
These Magi guys, where did they get their credentials? Did they like go to Magi school, or did they go, were they?
No, they were, it was genetic. It was just like the tribe of Aaron. And then they were taught from childhood. I mean, the wisdom was passed on. They started school, you know. It's the same way priests, the Hebrew priests. It was genetic, and the teaching of them began at the first words. They were taught. The Zoroaster predicted that to the Magians that when they should see a new star appear in the constellation Virgo, it would notify them the birth of a mysterious child who they were to adore and who would bring an end to all things. And that was one of the few quotes that is available from the Magi Holy Book, the Zend Avesta. That's from an Arab Christian historian. The ancient tradition says that the zodiac was a heavenly scroll that revealed all the mysteries of the universe. Remember, Isaiah talks about it being a heavenly scroll, and that when the end of time comes, the heavens will roll up like a scroll. The question was where to begin, because the zodiac is a picture of the sun as it moves through the heavens in 360 degrees, and it's separated into 12 parts as it moves through, and those 12 parts are not degrees or mathematical symbols, they're a set of pictures, and that's really what the whole science of astrology is the idea of seeing the mystery of the universe as it every day as it passes through, as the sun passes through the ecliptic of the heavens. And as the mystery is that the sun is passing through and the moon is passing through, and also these five visible planets are passing through. And so their locations, as it goes through the ecliptic of the heavens, their relationship to the signs of the zodiac is what gives flesh to the mystery. Now, but the problem is, in this is a circle, so because it's a circle, it has no beginning and no end, and so even if the mystery of the zodiac and the all of the understanding of the mystery of the stars was there, but you didn't know where to begin it or end it, you couldn't have a key to the mystery. And so that's why the ancients believed that the Sphinx was built. Today, the astrologers begin with Aries, the ram, as the beginning of the cycle. However, in the temple of Eshna in Egypt, in the ceiling portico, a Sphinx is placed between the sign of Virgo and Leo. And the Sphinx with the head of a woman and the body of a lion is never ceasing sign telling us to begin with Virgo and to end with Leo. Let's go to Isaiah 7:14. Start in verse 11. Ask thee a sign of the Lord thy God, ask it either in the depth or in the height above. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, neither will I tempt the Lord. And he said, hear ye now, house of David, is it a small thing for you to weary men? But will you weary my God also? Therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. So now go to Revelation 5. Verse 5. And one of the elders said unto me, weep not, behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals thereof. The idea is it begins with the virgin and ends with the lion. These are the major constellations, the major and the minor constellations that are in the heavens. The ancients divided the heavens up into these 12 pictures, and each of the 12 pictures had three other parts or decans. So for instance, for Virgo, the three decans or expansions on the tail for Virgo. Do you see Virgo?
To
the,
no.
What is Virgo?
Virgo is the woman. It's on the right bottom.
Tall woman.
It's a tall woman with a, you see her? Okay. Now the three, she's the main story in that constellation of Virgo, but the three companion stories that expand on the tail are Coma, see the woman with holding the child? The one right below it is Butes with a sickle, and then Centaurus, the half man, half horse with the... So those three are the companion decans, or minor constellations that go with the story of Virgo. What the mystery of this is, each of these signs, starting with Virgo, and you see the Leo is right above her. Each of these three, each of the signs, the major signs, and their three decans, tell the full story. And then each time it moves slightly, it expands on the tail until you go through the full ecliptic of the sun, you have the full revelation of Christ.
I want to say something that you said before that I think maybe will be neat. The idea that the people that we follow, that we read about, were desert people. They lived in the desert where there was no lights and anything. And they would lay out at night and look at these things, and the elders would tell the stories to the children. It's right. The way, it's the oral tradition. It's the way the tradition was passed down. It's like, here it comes.
And they saw the drama every night when they looked up into the stars.
Did you see all these? Yep. Like,
well, you can't see all of them in any given day. Through the year, you see them all.
So it's a course of study, in actuality.
So take the whole year for it to go all the way around?
Right.
Was it a year or 3 years?
Now, when we, there's a whole lot of, I mean, I can't, you can't even begin, you can't begin to understand the prophecies in the Old Testament. You can't understand Ezekiel, or Jeremiah, or Lamentations, or Job, and you certainly can't understand the book of Revelation without this. Because that's who, that was the predicate. It's like trying to understand the New Testament without knowing the law. You can't do it. Well, this was the predicate of all ancient peoples. This is what they knew.
What does it mean by the year of the ram or the year of whatever?
The age.
It's the age is, we'll get into all that. Okay. You'll see in great detail over and over all of those things that you... Okay, let's continue. So we saw that... You see in this ecliptic, it begins at Virgo and ends at Leo. Now the first constellation in Virgo shows that she will have a child and he will be the desire of all nations. The ancient name for the constellation that where the child is sitting on her knee is Coma, the desired or longed for. I go to, somebody go to Haggai 2, verse 7, and somebody go to Psalm 63. Harry, go to Haggai 2. Yeah.
And I will make all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of God.
Okay. It's just, I just wanted you to see that this is the reference to the desire of the nations.
First one?
Yeah.
O God, thou art my God. Early will I seek thee. My soul thirsteth for thee. My flesh longeth for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is.
Okay. It's the desire that is fulfilled in all of the types. It's fulfilled in him. The ancient Babylonian zodiac pictured this constellation as a woman with a child in her arms, just as you see it there, some slight version of that. An Arab historian called Abu Mashr, an 8th century Arabian astronomer, says, There arises in the first decan, and again, the constellations, these parts of the constellation are called decans, meaning parts, and is used of the three parts into which each sign is divided. There arises in the first decan, as the Persians, Chaldeans, and the Egyptians teach, a young woman whose Persian name denotes pure virgin, sitting on a throne, nourishing an infant boy, having a Hebrew name by some nations called Ihesu, which in the Greek is called Christos. And that's from the 8th century.
B.C.?
No. This picture is not found in the modern maps of the stars. If you looked and went to a modern astrology shop, you would see a wig there instead of a boy.
But you'd see the comma, you'd see the lady, but not
you'd
the
boy. You'd see the lady holding a wig. And it would, in some pictures, it shows her combing her wig.
And, yeah, kind of Zsa-Zsa.
And there's a great reason. I mean, there's a fascinating reason why that happened. As I said, the picture is not found in the modern maps of the stars. Now we find a woman's wig. Bernice, the wife of Ptolemy III, king of Egypt in the 3rd century B.C., vowed to consecrate her fine head of hair to Venus if her husband returned from battle safely. She shaved her head and hung her hair in the temple to Venus. It was allegedly, the story they tell, it was stolen to comfort her. And Canon, an astronomer of Alexandria, gave it out that Jupiter had taken it and made it into a constellation. Therefore, the Hebrew name Koma, desired one, was made an Egyptian word komei, or hair, and transferred to Latin coma, thus coma. Bernice comes down to us today as the name of the constellation, a woman's wig, instead of the blessed one, the desired of the nation. So that's just another.
Is that right, Mike? Cosmic. Where we get the word com?
Yeah. The ancient Egyptian name, this is fascinating, of that decan was Sheshnu, meaning in Egyptian, the desired sun. Now, the zodiac and the temple, now, the only way they know about this stuff is because in archaeology, the signs of the zodiac would be pictured on the temple ceiling. And so, at different times in history, they'd see, you know, if there were any changes made. The zodiac and the temple of Dendera in Egypt, going back at least 2000 BC, shows the woman with child on the throne. Now, Shakespeare, in Titus Andronicus, speaks of an arrow being shot up into heaven to the good boy in Virgo's lap. Tradition shows that the new star appeared in Coma, which was the star of Bethlehem that the Magi followed.
This one right here? Yeah. So is...
The Virgin.
Can I give you one?
Right. So, is that new star, do you suppose it's that one to the, at the bottom of the left hand of the boy?
No. No, it was in its head, but it wasn't a new star, it was a supernova. But you couldn't tell the difference. I mean, this one...
Yeah.
So it's gone now?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the point. The stars have stopped giving their light. Prophecy in the East, maybe from Daniel, well known and carefully preserved, that a new star would appear in this sign when he whom it foretold would be born. And this was Balaam's prophecy, as we studied in Numbers 17, that he held both the star and the scepter. The scepter is... The new stars appear periodically. It was in 125 BC that a star so bright as to be seen in the daytime suddenly appeared. This caused Hipparchus to draw up his catalog of the stars, which Ptolemy handed down. Now, Ptolemy was the great astronomer that was the, he was of the Seleucid family that ruled after Alexander the Great, and he's the one that really is, he cataloged more information than any other ancient historian or astronomer.
This bright star appeared where?
It was just in the sky, in 125 BC. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is the new star would show the latitude, because it would show where the latitude of it was, passing at that time immediately overhead at midnight every 24 hours, if you can see that. The prophecy would give the longitude as the land of Jacob. So by having the latitude and the longitude, and all calculations were done at midnight, that gave the longitude and the latitude that it was over Bethlehem. Now, with these, the Magi could simply continue until a star would meet those two requirements. Now, this one is one of the most beloved of those little stories that you hear. There's a tradition which relates how in their difficulties in the way from Jerusalem after talking with Herod to find the actual spot. Because, I mean, we're talking about the huge sky up there, and they were just going crazy trying to find exactly where, because it could have been in that hill over there, that hill over there. I mean, so one day they were exhausted, and the Magi sat down beside David's well of Bethlehem to refresh themselves, and they saw the star reflected in clear water at the deep well, and hence they rejoiced at noon, because they looked and saw the reflection of the star. If you've ever been in, you know you can do that, where the ambient light, huh?
That story kills me, because that well... I mean, it has to be exactly there because it's vertical. And that means it's directly overhead. It's just an incredible story.
Now, ancient writers believed clearly that it was a new star as opposed to a supernova, but they didn't. I mean, how could you tell the difference? Chrysostom speaks of its surprising brightness, but this is, he was wrote 150 AD. Ignatius, who was Bishop of Antioch in AD 69, he said, at the appearance of the Lord, a star shone forth brighter than all the other stars. Prudentius, a 4th century A.D., said, not even the morning star was so fair. But my instinct is that this star would look, probably wasn't seen, and these guys just years later were trying to expand on the tale. My instinct was it wouldn't be known by the general public. I mean, it had to be something that these, you know, only the ones that studied it could see it. Now, we know that the Magi knew something extraordinary from the stars. Did anyone else? I'm still, when I think about this, I'm just blown away at the difficulty of this journey. what could have possibly happened to cause these great, great men of the time to travel across? I mean, we're talking bad land. I mean,
robbers,
lions, thieves, famine, mountains, desert. That's all there is. There isn't anything nice over there. I mean, this is, what is it, 3,000 miles, something like that, from they traveled on foot over the worst territory in the face of the earth.
And these guys were used to living in the lap of luxury.
Oh, yeah.
Where did they head out? They must have headed out pretty early.
Yeah, 3,000.
Well, they headed out the moment they saw the star, and I think that was on the Feast of Hanukkah.
Took nine months to a year to get there.
9 months.
I'm not getting it. There was the first star, 125 BC, and there was another star.
Forget 125 BC. That was just an example. I was just saying that was what. That's the first. When they first started understanding that they could tie in by longitude and latitude
navigation
of vis-a-vis the new star.
Okay.
So forget 125. That's not important.
It almost seems like that land is a type or something. There's nothing to be desired. Christ came out of this stony, rocky,
desolate. That's what Isaiah 53 says. To whom of the arm is the arm of the Lord? He shall grow up before him as a tender plant, as a root out of dry ground. There's beauty in him.
Yeah, it's very cool, too, because the story that you normally hear is the journey from Egypt eastward. But these guys went the other way. They went from. They were kings of the world.
I need a better map. You need to see this.
They were kings.
They were kings.
Going to a dump.
Going to a dump. Going to pay homage to a child who, in their teaching, when that child was born, it was the end of time. So. And what must have been going on in their minds as they were traveling? What are we going to see? What's this going to mean? What?
Same thing with my mind on the journey. Where in the hell am I going, and why am I going to do it? When am I going to get there?
So when he was conceived,
the star.
Mary, and the star was there.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But then because it would take him that long to get to the point when he's born.
Right.
That's when he entered time and space.
He entered time and space, the star appeared. The Magi arrived there. And we don't know if anybody else set out on the journey. There may have been other holy men in other parts of the world that saw the same thing. Now, according to most Bible students, the world was without written revelation from God for more than 2,500 years. Was he without a witness? Now, Romans 1 says that which may be known of God is revealed in the things which he has made. And then Psalm 19 has this incredible statement. It says, their sound went into all the earth, their words unto the ends of the world. Now, the word sound there is Pythagos, which means a musical note. It's the beginning of the symphony. Went into all the earth, and their word though is the word rima, which is really important. It's logos lived. You know, faith cometh by hearing, and hearing cometh by the word, the rima of God. Do you ever notice that you can hear somebody talk about God stuff and it just sounds flat? Mm-hmm. And you hear somebody else talk about it and it sounds like life. Well, it has to be lived by the person speaking it. And that's the rhema. Now, what words, what instruction, what message, whose teaching went into the end of the world? The only answer can be the heavens. Now, somebody read Psalm 19. Who feels like?
The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Nay to day uttereth speech, and night to night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race.
Okay. The race is the strong man running the race throughout the day, coming out of his chamber, the bridegroom coming out of the chamber of the heavens. Okay.
He's going forth is from the end of the heaven, and a circuit under the ends of it.
The circuit, the going forth, the circuit of the ecliptic.
And there's nothing hid from the heat thereof. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul.
See, the first part of Psalm 119 is about the circuit of heaven. The last part of Psalm 119 is about the Torah. And they're both the same.
The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping of them there is great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and shall be innocent from the great transgression.
Okay, that's enough. So you see, the first part of it is about the circuit of the heavens, and the psalm going out into all the earth. And the last part is about the Torah. Now, the book of Job is generally recognized as the oldest book in the Bible. It's probably the oldest book in the world. It refers to the stellar revelations. The signs of the zodiac and the names of several stars and constellations are mentioned as being ancient and well-known even at that time. In Psalm 114, we don't go there, but you're going to get more of this than you've ever dreamed of. We're going to go through each of these scriptures 100 times over the course. But in Psalm 147, he says, quote, "He telleth the number of the stars, and he giveth them all their names." And do any of these names still exist? Job 9:9, Job 38, 31, and 32, he talks about which maketh Arcturus, Hebrew, the great bear, in Orion. He talks about in Pleiades, it talks about in the chambers of the south, or anyway, in numerous places, we believe the ancient original names that God gave are still in extent in the book of Job. He also says, "Canst thou bind the sweet influence of the Pleiades, or loose the bands of Orion? Can thou bring forth Maseroth in his season?" That's in Job 38. And in Isaiah it says, "For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light." And that's what we've been talking about. Let's read that. Isaiah 13. I'll show you something. Verse 6, "Howl ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. Therefore shall all hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt. And they shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman that travaileth. And they shall be amazed one at another. Their faces shall be as flames. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, cruel, both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light, and the sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine." You understand? That has all happened. We no longer see the mystery of the stars, we no longer understand the mystery of the sun, nor do we understand the mystery of the moon. That's it, it's not going to happen where, oh, there's going to be this time when I look up and I don't see any stars in the sky. The light of revelation has been taken from them, and our minds have been darkened so as to not to see the mystery of God. You understand? All right. Then in Amos it says, seek him that maketh the seven stars and Orion. And anyway, all over the place it talks about the planets and the stars. In Job it says, by his spirit he has garnished the heavens. His hand hath formed the crooked serpent. The constellation Draco or dragon is referred to in Job and in Isaiah. Anyway, the scriptures are very silent on the antiquity of this zodiac that we're going to study. In history, the 12 signs are the same, both as to their meaning and their order in all the ancient nations of the world. Now, this is where the mystery gets weird. The Chinese, Chaldean, Median, Egyptian records go back over 4,000 years. The zodiacs in the temples of Dendera and Esna in Egypt are copies which from internal evidence must be placed nearly 4,000 BC when the summer solstice was in Leo. Josephus refers to 8 Gentile authorities. He says they all assert that, quote, God gave the antediluvians such long life that they might perfect those things they had invented with regard to the stars, that their revelation might not be lost as to the two coming judgments of water and fire. He made 2 pillars describing the whole of the predictions of the stars of them. He also says astronomy and astrology originated with the family of Seth, and Persian and Arabian traditions ascribe their invention to Adam, Seth, and Enoch. God gave to Adam, and Adam gave to Seth, and Seth gave to Enoch. And it was lost in the flood, preserved only in the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid. Now, that's why I used to say that if it wasn't 2,000 years old, it's crap. Now I want to say if it's not eternal, it's crap. I mean, I just want you to grab hold of this.
So you're saying that the Sphinx and the Pyramid endured the flood?
They're the only 2 structures on earth that endured the Great Flood. In Genesis 11, at the time of the confusion of the nations, of the languages, it says, and quote, and they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. May and reach are not in the text. It says in the Hebrew, quote, and his top, the tower, which top is the heavens, or is the top with the heavens. The top, again, going high enough to get away from any ambient light. The top with pictures of the stars and a map of the stars, the same as in the temples of Dendera and Esna in Egypt. So that they weren't stupid enough they were going to build this tower to reach the heavens. They built a tower on top of which was the star map. And that's where the mystics did their calculations. The discovery of Babylonian ruins, the Bir Nimrud by Chesney, its height was 153 feet from the base. The base was 400 feet or 4 acres. It was constructed in 7 stages for the 7 planets. The lower stage was black for Saturn, the next stage was orange for Jupiter, red for Mars, etc. And it was called the 7 spears or 7 lights. On the top were the signs of the zodiac, with a representation of the heavens instead of the top which reached unto heaven. The Babylonians were a nation of stargazers, and they kept a body of men to do nothing except report eclipses, moon phases, sunspots, etc. The largest astrological work yet found contained 70 tablets and was compiled at the command of Sargon 3,800 years B.C. It was called the Illumination of Bel. And the fifth, let's take a break. This is a lot of stuff, I know, but I want to get through this introduction and we can get into it. But
what really blows me away about this, I think, is like I almost never believe that the moment is perfect. I almost never believe that God's in control and that he's the author of the moment. But then we start talking about this stuff, and I think about, like, if you go bowling, how difficult it is to throw a bowling ball and hit a pin. And then you think about, like, rocket scientists who throw a rocket and hit the moon at a place where it isn't when you throw it. And what is involved in creating the universe so that all of these things only look this way at one point, which is this point. And 8, 9, 10,000 years later, a star is exactly where it's supposed to be. I mean, it's and to write down ahead of time what's going to happen, so that when it happens, you know, it just blows me away. It's such a feeling of, I don't know what it is, but it destroys me.
Well, if
that's there, then what? I mean, my little problem with somebody arguing with somebody in the lair is like.
The purpose of this, and the purpose of this study, is to anchor you to eternity so nothing in the universe can dispel or move you from peace. I don't know any better way to do it.
Really?
Let's take a break. With no light, with the stars and their brilliance are seeing, and I know with everything in me, he taught them the mystery of the stars. These testify of me.
The last thing you said was that the 3800 BC, which was the something of Bel,
illumination.
Illumination of Bel. Now, there's a whole bunch of stuff that was found recently at the Elba Tell, that it's a library of several thousand tablets, and I just haven't heard whether or not they've found any astrological functions in that library, but I'm sure there were.
What is Bel?
It's the god that was the Babylonian god, the god of cause and effect, remember? Now, what the fifth tablet, it's called the fifth creation tablet, now in the British Museum, says this, quote, Anu, the creator, made excellent the mansions of the great gods, 12 in number. The stars he placed in them, the luminasi, the groups of figures he fixed. He arranged the year according to the bounds, the 12 signs which he defined. And for each of the 12 months, 3 constellations he fixed. From the day when the year issues forth unto the close, he marked the mansions, the 12 signs of the planets, the wandering stars, to know their course, that they might not err or deflect at all. You can go to the British Museum and see that.
Of course, it's in Hebrew, right?
No, this is in Babylonian.
Even better.
Now, Paul quoted in Acts 17:28, an ancient Arab poet. Somebody go there and read that, Acts 17:28.
For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own prophets have said, for we are also his offspring.
Okay. That was a quote from Aratus, which spoke of what they called the 12 divine signs. Aratus described and explained in that work the 12 signs and the 36 constellations as the Greeks in his day understood or misunderstood them. not as they were in his time, but some 4,000 years before. He wrote from the ancient zodiac of 4,000 years before him. Now the word zodiac, now people say it comes from the Greek zo, which means to live. It's really from the Hebrew sadi, or Sanskrit, it's the word for the way. So the zodiac is the way. Yeah, let me read the one thing. This was from the fifth, this isn't now in the British Museum, it's the fifth creation tablet from Babylon, and it says the following. Anu, the creator, made excellent the mansions of the great gods, 12 in number. The stars he placed in them, the luminasi, the groups of figures he fixed. He arranged the year according to the bounds, the 12 signs which he defined. For each of the 12 months, 3 constellations he fixed. From the day when the year issues forth unto the close, he marked the mansions, or the 12 signs of the planets, or the wandering stars, to know their courses, that they might not err or deflect at all. Now, standing on earth, the whole heaven appears to revolve in a circle once every 24 hours. And if you watch the moon, or the stars, the planets that you can see, they go on an ecliptic. And it's a defined path depending on the time of the year. The time occupied by the stars in going around is different from the time occupied by the sun. Now that difference amounts to 1/12th part of a circle each month, and that's where we get the 12 months of the year. So when the circle of the heavens is divided into 12 parts, the sun appears to move through each of them once each year. And the path which the sun makes amongst the stars is called the ecliptic. Now, there's also another interesting difference. The sun comes back to a point slightly behind the point it began 1 year earlier. It takes the sun 25,579 years for the sun to complete its circle, to go back to the same point it started. And that's, again, the ancients called that one day.
Did you say 25,000?
25,579 years. And the ancients called that one day. It's 25,579 years. And that's, if you watch where the north, true north is, it's around a group of stars, and we'll get into that in great detail. But that path of that little circle at the North Pole is 25,579 years.
Is that the wobble of the world?
Yeah.
Precession.
Now the sun, this is where we get these ages. The sun commences the year in one sign for 2,131 years. That's how long it's in an age. That circle is called the precession of the equinoxes. Now this you've all heard about being in the age of Aquarius, and the age of Pisces, and the age of this, and the age of that. It's defined by the age that you're in is defined by the first constellation that is seen on the evening of the spring equinox. Whatever constellation you're in at that point defines the age that you're in, whether it's the age of Pisces, or the age of Aquarius, or the age of... Each of the 12 parts of 30 degrees each is distinguished not by a letter or a number, but by a picture and names. The pictures are the same in all ancient nations and in all ages, therefore it's a common origin. The figures are arbitrary. Nothing suggests when you look at that grouping of stars for Virgo that that should be a human form, much less a woman, much less a virgin. So how then did all of the ancients all say that these groupings were the same? They had to have a common source. And that common source was Seth, which, and then Enoch, and then it was passed on through Moses, I mean through Noah, into his sons. Since ancient times, these 12 signs were connected with the 12 tribes of Jacob. Each one of the 12 tribes of Jacob was ascribed one of those 12 signs of the zodiac. Joseph, in his dream, sees the sun and the moon and 11 stars. He is the 12th, bowing down to him in Genesis 37. The blessings of Jacob and the blessings of Moses bear witness to the signs. Each of the 12 tribes bore a sign on their standard. In Numbers it says, quote, every man of the children of Israel shall pitch by his own standard with the ensign of the father's house. The ensign of the father's house was each of the tribes was assigned one of the signs of the zodiac. We'll go through this in great detail, more than you've ever wanted to know. The tribe of Judah was the Leo, the lion. The tribe of Zebulun was Virgo. The tribe of Simeon was Pisces. The tribe of Reuben was Aquarius. The tribe of Gad was Aries. The tribe of Benjamin was Gemini. The tribe of Ephraim was Taurus. Remember, Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. So Ephraim was Taurus. They were the true tribes, anyway. The tribe of Asher was Sagittarius, the tribe of Dan was Scorpio, and the tribe of Naphtali was Capricorn. And the tribe of Ishkar was Cancer. Now, when they set out, when they were moving across the wilderness and they set their camp out, it was set out according to the signs of the zodiac. Now the four great signs, the ones that marked the cardinal signs, marked the four quarters of the camp, and the four quarters of the zodiac form the cherubim. The eagle, the scorpion's enemy, replaces the scorpion. So the cherubim, I don't want to get into that tonight, you'll never understand it. We'll do that later.
How long was it aged, 2004?
131 years.
Whatever age are we in now?
We're coming to the end of the age of Pisces.
Would there be anything into the tribes that Christ came out of? Mm-hmm. If that tribe would have been, which one did it come out of?
Judah.
And so what was that?
Leo, the lion.
Was it significant?
Yeah, he was the one that was the scepter, the star and the scepter. He was the ruling, the one that would rule. And so it was the revelation that he was the desired one.
What age are we going into after Pisces?
Aquarius. I think that's enough for tonight. Anybody have any thoughts? Yeah, I don't know anybody that studies this stuff, unfortunately. I think there are probably some seminary professors at some, but maybe like in a French seminary or something that know about it. But I don't know anybody in the general public that knows about this stuff.
When you started talking about the 25,000 years as a day, I was like a trip back to being on a boat at night on the ocean. At one point you feel incredibly small and insignificant with the vastness of it, but then there's another feeling, which is that of expanding and being...
Remember what I believe, that faith cannot be blind. If it's blind faith, you produce Pharisees. faith and knowledge of him are the same. So as we see him, then faith is the fruit of that. And as we see him in the stars, you can't get much more faith than that. But we haven't even started.
Yeah, we have.
No, I mean, not to know the mysteries of these decans. I mean, that's where it's...
Yeah.
Wait till we get into the 12 labors of Hercules.
Ooh.
And the Eleusinian mysteries. Anybody have any other thoughts? I need a sticky tab.
Yeah, when you're talking about the whole thing being an anchor, it's like those ages or some feels like the immediacy.
Of an anchor?
Of the ages.
Oh, the ages, yeah.
Changes like, okay.
Yeah, it makes MTV King seem kind of silly.
It makes you want to live like 100 years to be able to really, you know, be like that. Those old guys had lots
of that, that's something that went through my head. The idea that
feel cheated.
Now at 50, it seems to me like days, weeks, months, years. It's like, my God, it's Passover all the time or something like that. But if you live 800 or 900 or 1,000 years, at that point, you get up to like 900 years, then a season or a circuit of the sun is like that. And it would become... hopefully become more clear, more clear, more clear, over and over and over, and be...
Yeah.
Whoa.
And again, just think that these were men who, they weren't cursed with a deductive mind, they were inductive.
I can see.
And understand it.
Joyce Santa was telling us about that the other day when she said they went to the mall and these paintings or drawings and artwork, it's done by computer, where when you look at it and you see nothing, but after a while your mind adjusts and you see the picture in it. She said, like, John can stand there for a half hour and not see the picture, but as they walk up to it, Johnny goes, God, isn't that cool?
The kids can do that all the time. Yeah. Megan does it.
They can
see right through.
I hate those guys. I read this years ago that people have to learn to read a photograph. That when they would take photographs and show them to Aborigines, they wouldn't know what they were because they have to learn to read.
Yeah, the Aborigines just saw the dots.
All they saw was dots, right? Wow. Wow.
Have you seen one of those paintings that she's talking
about?
Not
yet.
I've got a couple.
But I mean, I know a lot about foreground and background.
We gave one as a Christmas present and I never saw it.
Well, I'll bring one. I'll try to bring one someday.
But it proves again this thing about what you hear is what you see, and so we've been taught to hear linearly, and all reason and deduction is linear. That's the way our minds have been taught to think. That's not the way our minds were created. Our minds were created to see inductively by revelation.
Well, that's the way these are. If you don't look at it, if you just stare at the glass, the glare on the glass, then you'll see it. But if you look at it and try to see what's there, you can't see it for the world, man. I mean, you can sit there forever and you'll never see it.
Yeah, and we also believe that things are additive and progressive and that we're going toward some kind of completion. And even in this, the idea that, oh, you know, we'll study this one and we'll study that one and we'll study that one, and at the end of it, we'll see something.
But yeah, I want you to...
Each one of these is the story.
Right. I want you to see that this isn't something that you're going to possess as you go through it. This is something you already possess. I mean, you don't have to struggle.
Something out of us.
Yeah, well, wieners in your finger.
You're not
going to
contain the stars.
That's good. That's good.
Anybody have any other thoughts?
If we need it at some point, if we could go somewhere.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to do. I wanted to do this since... before we were a Bible study, and that's I want to program, get my hands in a planetarium, and program this into the planetarium with a voiceover explaining it.
St. Mark's is kind of fun.
But that would be so awesome.
How about a cruise?
No, but the problem is, no, the reason it needs to be a planetarium is because you can go through the number of years to see the full progression.
You need how to say it.
So we're going on a long cruise.
At least I do.
But hopefully there'll be a greater depth and permanency of your faith after we get into this. So, yeah, take a big guy.